Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. And John, right on cue, March is going to come in like a lion tomorrow. The winds are going to be back with us. Oh, my goodness. Near 50-mile-an-hour wind gusts. But then looking ahead, this may be kind of the last of these storm after storm, and things might start to stabilize. I hope so. All right, it is the final day of February. It's Tuesday, February 28th, 2023. For all of you leap year babies, my condolences. You celebrate on the 28th because my nephew over in California was born on February 29th. So, of course, he celebrates today. Our show now in its 13th year, broadcasting from the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, radio station we come to you on, 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. Our website, which I'm very proud that we have archived pretty much every show we've done over the past 12 years. It's at buckmastershow.com, Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Without further ado, let's use the Live Line and go to the state capital of Arizona. Up to Phoenix we go, and on the Live Line, State Representative Stephanie Stahl Hamilton, a Democrat who was elected in November to represent District 21, and 21 covers pretty much kind of the central part of Tucson and southeast Tucson down to Green Valley and Nogales. Representative Stahl Hamilton, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. It's good to be with you today.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. We had you on for about 40 minutes as kind of a preview show for this legislative session. Let's see, we're 6 to 7 weeks into it. I'm kind of curious, what are some of your thoughts? How is it going?
Well, you know,
I think I know the answer to this one.
Hence the laugh before the answer,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
No two sessions are alike, but this one seems particularly unique in that we spend the first 5 weeks of this session waiting on our colleagues across the aisle to produce a budget, because they insisted no bills would be heard until they produced a budget to send to the governor's desk. But there was a lot of infighting, and so we were going to committees, we were doing our thing, but no bills were moving on the floor. And so then these last week and this week has been marathon sessions on the floor, going through committee on the whole and third read. So we are now plowing through hundreds of bills in 4 or 5 short days. Well, long days, I guess.
Well, there was something called a skinny budget, and what was that about? The Republicans produced what they called a skinny budget that they knew the Democratic governor, Governor Hobbs, was going to veto. So why bother with it?
Right now the power dynamic has shifted, and folks our colleagues across the aisle are quite nervous about what this means to have a Democrat sitting in that chair, you know, in that office. And the skinny budget, or the other word that they were using, was a continuation budget. And that was pretty much the basis of the budget that was passed last year that folks were claiming had bipartisan support. And so they thought, well, if it was good enough for last year, it should be good enough for this year. But that budget really was produced by the Republicans, and when they couldn't get their full caucus on board, we were able to negotiate some things into that budget, but it wasn't a true bipartisan process. And so it makes for good headlines to say bipartisan budget last year. If it was good enough last year, why not this year? But our governor put out different priorities for this legislative session and for the state of Arizona. And those priorities were not at all reflected in this continuation budget. And honestly, depending on who you talk to, does it make sense to do the budget first and then try to make heads or tails out of appropriations and bills with appropriations that come through? Or do we do the business, see where the appropriations are, and then put our priorities in place when it comes to the budget. You know, the argument is the most important thing we do here at the state legislature is produce the state's budget. And so there's been also some arguments or conversation about what that process should look like. And right now, our colleagues across the aisle say the budget should come first and then everything else gets dealt with. And, you know, it's a different approach. It was not a conversation we were able to have. We were told this is just how it was going to be. This is the new process and the priorities, and we needed to get on board. But we did not.
Yep. We are speaking with State Representative Stephanie Stahl Hamilton, and I'm sure you've heard the news, this breaking news out of the Capitol. Senator Raquel Tehran, is it? T-E-R-A-N, the Democratic leader in the Arizona State Senate, announced now she is stepping down from that position, I guess, immediately to explore running for Congress in Arizona's 3rd District. So you and your Democratic colleagues are going to have a change in leadership there.
They will in the Senate, for
sure.
There is going to be a little bit of a shift. She'll still continue to serve the district, but she won't in the capacity, you're correct, as leader. It'll be interesting to see, you know, who the Democratic caucus puts forward as their next leader. And we'll see, you know, how long that takes for that process. I don't think it should be very long. You know, when you're dealing with 14 people, I think that process should go pretty quickly.
That should speed it up. All right. So there's so much that needs to be accomplished at this legislature. And has anything major been accomplished so far?
Not yet. No. And again, we're in week two of crossover week, which typically is week one. Bills have been vetoed by the governor, the ones that have made it to her desk. And certainly, I think beyond the budget, the skinny budget, continuation budget, we're still seeing a lot of oxygen given to conspiracy theories in regards to elections. And so trying to get the people's business taken care of is really been slow work this session, and I find that we're being distracted, or there are distractions aplenty here instead of focusing on, you know, our typical talking points for the Democrat caucus, and that is funding our schools, looking at housing. Certainly the number one issue that we should be dealing with, in my opinion, is water and the lack thereof in our state.
Yes, I say amen, amen to that.
Right, but for whatever reason, there's still a lot of nonsense happening at this place, lots of distractions.
Well, it's another one of these, and my friend Tim Steller at the Arizona Daily Star wrote this in the paper last week. The legislature so far continues to kick the can down the road when it comes to water issues, Stephanie.
Correct. Yeah. And it's frustrating. For years, there have been bills put forward that don't see the light of day, that, you know, really want to tighten up our you know, the loopholes that we find in the Groundwater Management Act, wanting to put in controls and ways to monitor groundwater pumping in our rural parts of Arizona. You know, so many things that are smart policy that would make us sustainable in the realm of water, not to mention, you know, we still, out of our 22 tribes, we still have 10 tribes that do not have their water rights settled, you know, those settlements. And so it's hard to know how to allocate water when we still have not given our first peoples their water rights. So so much. And yes, we're continuing to kick the can down the road. It's frustrating for me as the ranking member for the Democrats on the Natural Resources, Energy and Water Committee, obviously something I'm very passionate about. It is so frustrating to know that we can make changes, and we are so willing to want to work towards sustainability, and we can't even get a seat at the table for those conversations.
That's very discouraging. Anyway, let's end on an optimistic note, Stephanie
yes.
Stahl-Hamilton. Perhaps this session will not go down to the wire in June 30th. I mean, we can keep our fingers crossed, but I don't know. Some folks think it's going to be one of those years.
Those are the only kinds of years I've known since I've been in the legislature.
There you go.
It wouldn't be any different for me. It would be wonderful that 100 days gets thrown around a lot. And the speaker this morning mentioned that we are on day 52. Oh, how wonderful it would be if in 48 days we could wrap up the business.
Well, I wouldn't want to make that bet that the 100 days.
Right. No, you would have the losing end. But
I know.
I think the process is necessary, and this is the positive piece. The process is necessary. We knew that this year was going to be brutal with the shift in the power dynamic. And, you know, it's going to take folks a hot minute to figure out what this looks like and truly how we have to adjust how we negotiate with one another. I think we're smack dab in the middle of that process, and it just unfortunately requires time.
All right, Stephanie Stahl-Hamilton, State Representative from the Tucson and Nogales Green Valley corridor there. Thank you very much. We'll check in with you as the session progresses. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, let's talk about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open at 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday, 7 o'clock Sunday morning. And, of course, I've been saying get there early for the best choice of those luscious pastries. The advice is especially important on weekends. Mona's is especially popular on weekends. But find out what all the excitement's about. Check out their website, monasdanishbakery.com. Up next, Shelley Fishman. Oh boy, another one of those, huh? We'll tell you about what's going on the markets and a lot more with Shelley after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. The markets are having, I think we could say, the extenuation of a lousy week last week.
Well, Last week was lousy. Today is flat.
Okay.
Yesterday was mildly positive.
Well,
what we have here is the market's angst about what the Fed is going to do in 2 weeks, and is there going to be a recession, and a couple of corporations reported earnings that didn't meet their objectives. And without a real direction, markets tend to do what they're doing. You know, they have a couple of good days, they have a couple of bad days. This is nothing to worry about at this point because nothing fundamental has changed.
Well, there's still the pre-recession fears. There's the Fed worries.
Clearly, Bill, there's a battle going on between people who are afraid and concerned about inflation, and people who are afraid and concerned about recession. And those two things go against one another in a normal, traditionally thought of economic model, because when you begin to raise interest rates, which is really the only tool the Fed has to kind of fix this inflation problem, then what happens is businesses slow down. When businesses slow down, they start laying people off, or traditionally they have laid people off. That slows things down even more. People don't have money. They don't buy stuff. And as a result, the economy slows down. And when the economy slows down, in theory, inflation comes under control. Unfortunately, that's 1970s, 1980s theory. Today, we're not so sure. So I go back to, I guess it was Sunday's New York Times business section with a headline that says, what layoffs? Many employers are eager to hang on to workers. Why? Because the unemployment rate right now is at all-time historic lows. Workers are not clamoring to get new jobs. Laying off workers is potentially dangerous. If the economy picks up, then you've got to rehire people and retrain them, and that's very expensive. So what's happening is employers aren't laying people off. But you say, well, what happened with, you know, all those high-tech firms that laid off all those gazillions of people? Turns out it's a blip on the radar. They had overhired during the pandemic, and we're just kind of cutting back to what their normal business is. I mean, it's really incredible. The current rate of layoffs is at an all-time low, despite all of the headlines. Now, you know, there are people who are looking to make things appear to be worse than they are, for political reasons, who point to those, you know, 100,000 here, 10,000 there, you know, whatever. But when you take a look at the full economy, the layoffs in December were actually at an all-time low.
Mm-hmm.
But even when you take a look at, you know, more than 1 month's figures, the employers are just scared to death to lay people off. They'd rather ride through a time of, you know, perhaps a slowdown in the economy because they have such an investment in their employees. And for me, that's a pleasant surprise, Bill, because my observation over the past several years is that for a lot of reasons, 401ks and just the general mobility of the working public, employers have been much more hesitant in the recent past to invest the money in training in employees than they have been, you know, traditionally throughout certainly my working career. So when I read stuff that documents not just, you know, what the statistics are, but then, you know, goes to employer after employer after employer who, you know, give anecdotal evidence that, you know, I'm going to hold on to as many of these people as I can because they're experienced and I've invested in them. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and who can't? Everybody's having the same problem trying to find somebody to, whether it be somebody to service your pool, a gardener, or anything. It seems like there's a shortage of people.
Absolutely. We were at a dinner. I won't mention the restaurant on Sunday when we went to one of the chains and. And I swear, there wasn't a server working over the age of 11. Now, of course, I'm exaggerating, but it was amateur night. And, you know, when I spoke to the manager, you know, she said, we just can't get people. So we're doing the best we can. I apologize for what's going on. But people don't want to be in this business. If they're serious about careers, this isn't the place to build a career. And so, you know, with 3.4% unemployment, that's a real problem. Hopefully, a lot of these people who are not in the workforce right now are, investing in their own careers and training and that kind of thing.
It's a hybrid economy. We've talked about that before. It's just, yeah, it's different.
Absolutely.
All bets are off with the Fed, who have been using kind of the way it used to be models. Those models don't exist.
The models aren't working.
They are not working.
And so, you know, that's good news, because if the models were working, we'd be going into a recession.
There you go.
And we're not.
But they're not. Hey, quickly, I want to update. We've talked a little bit about environment, social, and government, this fight that's going on, it's becoming more and more in the news. So
we mentioned it last week.
Yeah, we mentioned it last week.
And then, sure enough,
other commentators, national commentators, are talking it up pretty big.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this battle is between the states who want to ensure that banks are not disadvantaging short-term earnings prospects. This gets into the weeds, Bill. I'm sorry about
That's
it.
That's all right.
But so what's happening is states are proposing measures that would subpoena records from banks. Now, you know, these national banks, I mean, these are left-leaning, pinko-communist organizations.
Oh, sure,
you know,
sure.
Clearly, yeah, they're just the biggest banks in the country.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure that the banks have no prohibitions or qualms about lending money to companies that may or may not be considering the environmental, social, and governmental aspects of their stakeholders. So what they're trying to do is really intimidate these banks into making sure that the banks are lending money to corporations, and very often it's corporations that are in carbon industries and in energy industries or in tobacco and that kind of thing, who are clearly not as responsible as some other corporations, but the state's businesses in general require that those companies prosper. And the banks are taking a long-term view of this. Say, what's good for you and your stakeholders in the long term is to really worry about this stuff, whereas the state governments, mostly these Republican-dominated state governments, are saying, no, I'm not worried about the long term. We're worried about the short term. They've got to make profits, because if they don't make profits, then we have a problem here in the state. And so this is a very good discussion to have. It's something that we need as an economy, as a society, to work through. And just a plug for our federal government, if you will, tonight, apparently in prime time, on TV stations, will be a hearing in the, and I believe it's a House committee, on the Biden chip initiative. And
which Arizona in this sweepstakes stands to gain tremendously?
Oh, clearly.
Especially the Phoenix area.
Clearly.
Mainly the
Phoenix.
But
what you're going to hear tonight is more of this ESG stuff.
Yeah.
Because the Biden administration is saying, in order to get this money from the federal government to build the factories and to really staff up, you've got to, as a company, pledge that you will do the right thing when it comes to hiring women and minorities, to training these people, to providing a full range of benefits and good salaries. And if you don't pledge to do that, you ain't getting the money. Now, that sounds like government interference. It is government interference, but it's also government funded. Mm-hmm. So I believe that tonight's session in the House is going to be very, very interesting to listen to.
Okay, Shelley Fishman, hope you have a great rest of the week. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
All right, we'll take a break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site. Everything you need to get started on your spring gardening after this next storm, which is blowing through here tomorrow. Weekend and beyond is looking really good. for really things settling down a bit and doing your get your spring gardening underway. Green Things, 53 years in the business. And their website is greenthingsaz.com. And Zocalo Village, their sister business, beautiful things from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe, including great selection of Talavera pottery. ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We welcome back to the program our friend General Ted Maxwell. The General is in the studio. General Maxwell has led the Southern Arizona Leadership Council as president and CEO since 2018. His nearly 34 years of military service includes 15 years in active duty Air Force and additional 19 in the Arizona Air National Guard. Yes, he does know how to fly a very high-powered aircraft. He enjoys flying. Even now has his own general aviation aircraft. General, how are you?
Doing good, Bill. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. Your final military position was Commander, Arizona Air National Guard, which economically surprises people, General, that there's such a large presence, and it's a big money maker.
Well, the fact of the matter is we are the fifth largest Air National Guard state in the U.S., and
wow.
we're one of the few with three flying missions. We've got two large, relatively large units, one down here at the 162nd Wing, which is located out on Tucson International Airport, largest F-16 wing now in the country with almost 80 aircraft on the ramp, and they also do operations out of Davis-Monthan, flying in both a unmanned aerial vehicle as well as that's where they sit Homeland Defense, and additionally up at the Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport, we've got a KC-135 air refueling unit, the only air refueling unit really out here on the southwestern border of the United States. So it plays a very critical role both in the U.S. and outside of it. And we've got almost 2,700 airmen.
Wow. You know,
men and women that are serving our country through by membership in the Arizona Air National Guard.
So think of the piece with DM and the Air Guard unit. You've got a sizable part of our economy there.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. They're actually, the military's doing a review. Alan McGuire does a study every once in a while that shows the economic impact of the military's presence in Arizona. And when you look about the Yuma Proving Ground, the Yuma Marine Corps Air Station, Luke Air Force Base, it's almost $20 billion annually. So it really is significant. And here for Tucson and Arizona, it's important. Not only do we have folks from DM who come back here quite often through their career, whether it's with the A-10 or that mission, but they then choose to settle here. And then the guard, you
hear about that all the time.
And the guard unit's almost 1,700 strong down here in Southern Arizona alone. And those are all community residents and citizens who are serving in the military.
Yeah,
so
yeah, big.
So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yep. In 2021, General Maxwell was appointed by then Governor Ducey to represent Pima County on the 7-member Arizona State Transportation Board. He's also the Arizona Department of Transportation representative. There is an ADOT representative on our local Regional Transportation Authority Board. That's a 9-member board of directors. In addition, he's currently serving on the Governor's Water Augmentation, Innovation, and Conservation Council. I wanted to start with transportation, but I just brought up water, so a good segue would be we just heard State Representative Stahl Hamilton with us at the top of the show talking about it is discouraging. She believes, and I do as well, in general, that water is the real big issue right now up at the legislature, but they're not taking, at least in State Representative Stahl Hamilton's view, a hard enough position on getting to it.
Well, there's a challenge to it in a lot of different ways. As Representative Stahl Hamilton pointed out, things are pretty slow up there right now. There's still a lot of posturing, and I'm going to say
a lot of gamesmanship,
and gamesmanship from both sides. There's a lot of the independent redistricting Commission, which created the current maps, actually ended up having a lot more competitive districts than anybody thought throughout the map drawing process. There was a lot of, you know, screaming and yelling about, oh, we're making them less competitive. There's actually was more competitive districts this last election than the prior one. Some of them came as surprises, but that's, remember, when they're counting plus and minuses, they don't include the independents in there. So some of the districts, until you see them vote, you don't exactly know how they are. However, a lot of the districts are safe. And what we saw last year is 14 state legislators lose in the primary, 8 Republicans and 6 Democrats. So it wasn't just the Republicans, which people always think they're tacting farther to the extreme, but the Democrats are also moving in that direction. Thus, 6, what I would call a little bit more collaborative Democrats lost as well. And that's created this environment that, one, all those folks who were elected, they've got to go back and show the people that elected them, hey, I'm going to stand for my, you know, extremely staunch small government business approach, or I'm going to stand for my progressive, you know, we've got serious issues we got to take care of. And they're making those cases now.
And that was what the so-called skinny budget was all about. That was a document to show, hey, I'm talking to the constituents.
Absolutely. And it was a starting point for those discussions. What I think we're seeing is a lot of the comments being made and the lack of movement on water and lack of, you know, as legislator Stahl Hamilton mentioned, she goes, there's a lot of good water bills that go forward that never get heard. Well, it's because they just don't get out of the Republican legislature. But this year it's even be more difficult, at least early, because so far Governor Hobbs has already used the veto stamp, and she's got to, you know, Governor Napolitano's veto stamp. I guess she got it from her, and she's already used it 14 times.
Has she really?
So it's already up to 14 vetoes. And there's, I believe, the record was in the 50s that Governor Napolitano had used it during her tenure there over times. And some people think it may get more than that this year, but we'll see. We're just at crossover week. There's a lot of bills that move, a lot of bills that don't move. But then once they cross over, now you really start seeing the legislature, including the leadership of both parties, start trying to come together and figure out what really is going to move. The fact of the matter is, to get something done this year, there's going to have to be some give and take. And remember, they're still forecasting about $1.8 billion surplus. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see in that surplus a lot of the give and take. Okay, we'll fund this, and we'll agree to fund that for you. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take both sides. Mm-hmm. The margins are narrow. And, you know, we saw them get through with the AEL, you know, to ensure that the funding was there for the remainder of the school year. They're going to have to come to some agreement on some other issues going forward.
Do you think Arizona lawmakers will then address an area that you've been following on the Arizona Department of Transportation Board? This national infrastructure project assistance was rejected for the 26-mile stretch of I-10, which is now just 2 lanes in each direction. The hope had been that the government was going to help fund that. If the state had to step in, it could be $360 million. Well, where are we on this right now, General?
So Representative T.J. Shope, that's the bill that he's put together. I think most folks know that Senator Shope represents LD-16, which actually comes all the way down into Pima County now.
Does it really?
It does. It comes down, captures the Tucson Mountains and the west side of that.
Wow.
So Senator Shope, he's worked with us a lot in the past, and he's now a true Pima County representative as well, as his district comes down into that area. He's proposed the $360 million to come out of probably that surplus we were talking
that
about.
Big surplus.
Which will give us the funding so that we can do the expansion to 3 lanes on the entirety between Tucson and Phoenix as a single project. The reason that's important is as a single project, we are capable to get cost savings. We can do it under one project management team. We only have to go to bid once. Everything can be done in one shot. And that's important. Now, what he's done creative is he's put in that bill that if other funding becomes available, because I'll tell you what ADOT's plan is. ADOT's going to go back out of the next round of grants. Those grants were just the first. There was 9 projects that were approved nationwide for these mega grants. We're going to go back after the grant again.
So it may still be doable.
It's my belief is it will get done. Mm. I think with the leadership of Senator Shope, you're going to get the funding put in place so that we have the $360 million, which gives us a total of $760, which mm-hmm. is what we believe it's going to take to do the entire project.
Mm-hmm.
We'll bid it as one. We'll do one. And if we get that federal funding, then that will come back into the state in the year that it's received. So now it can be used, again, as surplus money to either go to other projects or go elsewhere. The reason I think I personally was surprised, although mm-hmm. more I've learned, the more I'm not as surprised, is we are bringing over 50% of the money to the project. That's a large amount of state or local matching fund for any project. So I thought it had a high probability. When you look at where some of those projects went, you know, one of them went to state of New Jersey, and if everybody recognizes, you know, where mm-hmm. the leadership in the Senate comes from, it's just part of one of the challenges of dealing with mm-hmm. things on the federal level. Mm-hmm. There's things are going to happen. And the fact that it was that the project in New Jersey was over $300 million. The other major project was over almost $300 million. And then if you put the $400 million in from our project, that meant three projects were done in those first level of grants. And the federal, you know, the Congress was not going to approve only three projects out of the IIJ. They wanted mm-hmm. to get nine with that first big group of mega grants. And I still have hope and confidence that we've got a good chance of getting those funds, but the state legislature understands the importance, and I think they're going to find a way, probably during the budget negotiations, to ensure that we can do that as a single project, because it saves time, money, and ultimately will bring an enhanced safety to a large, large portion of the citizens in the state of Arizona who travel I-10 on a regular basis.
There is an ADOT meeting, a public meeting, March 2nd, correct, here in Tucson. It's on the 2050 long-range transportation plan, and everyone's invited. 5:30 for the formal presentation, and then, 6 o'clock for the formal presentation. Where is that, General, going to be?
Well, you're asking me a question I was not prepared to answer, I don't have
answer.
I know you
I have
do.
The answer.
You always have the answer, Bill.
Donna R. Liggins Recreation Center. And this is going to be we're talking, a long-range deal here.
So here's, I brought a copy of it with me.
There you go.
It's you know, almost 500 pages, but we do this every year at ADOT.
Okay.
Because our five-year transportation facilities construction program is just that. It's a rotating five-year program. And it breaks down where the projects are, the expansions. You know, we worry about really three things: preservation, modernization, and expansion. And what I think is important for the people that go and see this, or if you get online and look at the plan, is if you look at the next 5 years, in fiscal year 29, there is $0 for expansion in greater Arizona.
Wow.
Zero. When I first was briefed, when I joined the board in May of 2 years ago, it was zero starting in 26. So we've moved the target a little. Mm. But the fact of the matter is right now our national highways system in the state of Arizona is about 51% in good shape, and our non-national highway roads that ADOT is responsible mm-hmm, for mm-hmm. are down at 33% good. Mm-hmm. Those aren't good ratings. So what's it mean? The large majority of our money is going to our preservation and mm-hmm. modernization. And so there's no money left for expansion, which, Bill, what we've talked about a lot mm-hmm. means the importance of regional funding for infrastructure is critical.
Yeah.
And the RTA Next, as we're calling it now, is going to be a critical point on will we be able to expand our roadways that we need to move goods, services, and people, both for quality of life and for our economy in the future. It's going to be reliant a lot, both in Maricopa, and they're having problems with their RTA, and here in Tucson and the Pima County region for
our RTA. Pick up on that thought with General Ted Maxwell, who is on the Regional Transportation Authority Board of Directors. Get an update on what's the latest on RTA Next as we continue on the Buckmaster Show with General Maxwell right after a quick break.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson's Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for Marketplace Trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
Go. Time flies during the noon hour here on the Buckmaster Show. I want to talk a little bit about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Start thinking about your spring getaway. Just about a three-hour drive east of Tucson to a beautiful area of the Southwest. And we have had a very productive weather-wise monsoon-ish winter. How about that? Gila National Wilderness greening up. Very nice. So it'd be a great getaway. Only a three-hour drive to Silver City. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org, for where to stay, what to do, and where to dine. Some great recreation opportunities. All right, I only have about 5 minutes left with General Ted Maxwell, who is the leader of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. He is on the 7-member Arizona State Transportation Board, and we talked in the first segment. The hope is high that we will be able to do the whole I-10 project in one big project. And then we want to talk about the RTA, the Regional Transportation, next, as the 20-year program gets ready to sunset here in a little over 4 years. The Arizona Department of Transportation representative on the 9-member RTA board is General Ted Maxwell. So where are we with RTA next right now?
Well, Bill, we're still in the creation phase of the plan. The citizens of 35-person Citizens Advisory Committee is already kind of vetted. They haven't made the final decision, but they've vetted a lot of the projects that were proposed by the municipalities and by the county and by ADOT. And what narrowed that field, and they're at the point of trying to determine what those final projects are going to be. And they've also started looking at what we call the other buckets, the safety enhancements, the transit piece, which takes up a good amount of the funding. And so they're having the good conversation. The technical management committee, who works hand in hand with the Citizens Advisory Committee on developing this plan, they're also responsible for reviewing, are these projects feasible? What impact are they going to be? And they make their recommendations as well. And so I know the between the two groups, they're still trying to work out their individual recommendations. And ultimately, that will come back to the board, and the board will either send it back for some more refinement, or will say, let's move it forward. When we move it forward at that point, then it's time to start taking it out to the citizens. And there will be somewhere between 4 and 8 months of significant engagement and citizen meetings, meetings with organizations, both, and I don't want to say selling, we're not at the selling point yet on the projects, but telling everybody what's in the plan, what's going to benefit them or their area or their areas of concern, and we take input from the community. Because ultimately, the voters are the final say on the RTA. And therefore, one of the most important segments is making the modifications that we hear from on a repetitive basis from the broadest segment of the citizens of the region, because we need to make sure that they want to get behind it. Now, one of the challenges is it's not as simple as just pleasing 50% of the people in the region. You want to please a lot larger segment than that, and you really want to please give all the municipalities a reason for getting behind it. Mm-hmm. So one of the challenges that the Citizens Advisory Committee faces is when they're looking at these projects, where do the projects lay down? Who are they going to touch? If we're going to take, we've got to remember it's a regional transportation plan. Each one of the municipalities is going to have their own transportation as well. Tucson has Move Tucson. Obviously the largest municipal plan for their infrastructure. Mm-hmm. But we need to understand that when we're looking at the regional approach, it has to be regional in nature. That means there will be projects that may not leave the certain municipalities, but they have to feed into the regional network. And remember, to me, infrastructure is such a key part, not only to a thriving economy, but more importantly, to a high quality of life. If it's not easy to get around in a town, it becomes very difficult, whether you want to try to go see a doctor or trying to go buy goods or just go out and entertain.
Yeah, so
we don't need.
You don't want a pothole filled journey to wherever you're headed.
That's absolutely true. And a lot of people forget that a lot of times when we're expanding or improving these roadways, mm-hmm. we're resurfacing while we're doing it.
Yeah.
So they'll go, well, where's the maintenance? No, there's no maintenance involved. But right now, as of now, there's still no maintenance in the RTA next plan. But when you do a restructure and an improvement, look no further than Grant, Speedway, mm-hmm. Broadway. Those are brand new roadways now.
Yeah.
So you've effectively done the maintenance on them by redoing them as well and making them more efficient for moving cars, bicycles, walkers, and citizens.
And it's not, I said 4 years. I mean, time flies. It's actually 3 years in May that this program will sunset.
And that is the challenge.
Yeah.
That's the challenge we face. So, Maybe next May, maybe next December. Mm-hmm. We'd like to get it to the voters early enough so that if it fails the first time at the ballot, that there's a second swing. Because the last thing we want to have happen is come May of 2026 for it to expire and mm-hmm. there's nothing there. And look closely at that 5-year transportation plan coming out of the state. There is no money for expansion in Pima and Mag without the regional funding.
Well, so you've got to have it. There is a huge selling point right there. Zero funding down the road from the state.
And additionally, what people forget, Bill, is a lot of times when we're putting money forward towards a project, there's a lot of federal funds that come into it. But mm-hmm. without the matching, you aren't even eligible.
It. Yep. All right, General Ted Maxwell, always a pleasure. We'll see you. Try to bring you in every month. I think we've already got you on the calendar for the end of March. Thank you, General.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
All right, on behalf of the General and John, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster saying thank you very much for spending your lunch hour with us. We'll do it all over again at lunchtime on Wednesday. That's tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.